Well, this morning we continue to look at the Sermon on the Mount. Feels like we've been doing this for a very long time, but we're finally in the home stretch now. This is our last month of the Sermon on the Mount. And we reach another section that I am sure everybody is very familiar with. And it's those sections that we're really familiar with that it's important to look at closely, because sometimes we know them, but we don't really know them. We don't really understand them. I'm going to read from Matthew 7, verses 1 to 6. It will be on behind me. "Judge not, that you not be judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when there's a log in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the log out of your own eye, and then you will clearly see to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Do not give to dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you." Now, when we reach this section of Jesus' teaching, there's something about the radical nature of the Sermon on the Mount that changes a little bit here. You see, Jesus is now using words and concepts that at the time were actually already quite familiar with people. But what he's doing is he's bringing a fresh emphasis to them and a renewed importance to them. Rather than earlier in the Sermon on the Mount, he took things and he turned them on the head, this time he's changing their level of importance. Many rabbis warned against judging others. There was a common saying amongst the rabbis, and it was this: "He who judges his neighbor favorably will be judged favorably by God." It's very similar. Jesus isn't disagreeing with what somebody said here. What he's doing is reinforcing the eternal importance of it. You know, we've known, I think, since we've been Christians, even not a very long time, that we're not supposed to judge others. We know this. It's some early on looking at this and thinking, do I really need to get up and tell the church not to judge others? We know this. It's not a new teaching. We know Jesus said, don't judge. Yet throughout history, and even today, I would say the church continues to ignore this teaching. Who here can say nobody has ever misjudged you? Who here can say no Christian has ever misjudged you? Okay. Who here this morning can say you've never suffered as a result of somebody else's misjudgment? You'd think that would build a resilience into us, wouldn't you? But let me ask you another question. Who here this morning can say you've never been guilty of misjudging somebody? There is hardly any commandment of Jesus which is more consistently broken and neglected by his church. Matthew 7, verses 1 and 2. Jesus said, "Do not judge, that you will not be judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. With the measure you use, it will be measured to you." You know, I'd say, "Judge not, lest you be judged," is one of the most quoted Bible verses today. Actually, I'd go one further than that. I'd say it's one of the most quoted verses by non-Christians today. In fact, I'd go even further. I would say it's the verse most quoted by non-Christians to Christians in the most smug way today. As if somehow they've trapped you with your own scriptures. Doesn't the Bible say, "Judge not, lest you be judged"? You see, this verse has been twisted to mean that Christians have no right to point out sin. That we have no right to be concerned about sin or to warn somebody about the direction in their life or the direction they've chosen. Can I say right from the start, that is not how Jesus intended this teaching to be used. Jesus was never shy to point out sin. The apostles were never shy to point out sin when they saw it. And we must never be shy to point out sin. By the way, when somebody says that to you, judge not, lest you be judged. When they accuse you of being judgmental for having a moral objection to something, what are they doing? They're judging you. They're making a judgment about your motivation. They assume they know your motivation, and they themselves have made a judgment about you. Therefore, they've defeated their own point. Now, clearly, when you get caught in this loop, it can get a bit silly. Because I've just made a judgment about them. Every day we make judgments on situations. Every day we will encounter sin. And we cannot turn a blind eye to sin. So what is it Jesus is saying? Now remember where this teaching is taking place. We've had the last several weeks, and what have they been about? They've been about the heart. They've been about our motivation. Why do we give? Not what do we give, but why do we give? Why do we pray? Why do we fast? If we're doing these things so others can see us doing them, then Jesus said, you've already got your reward. But if you do it because you have a heart for God's heart for other people, then the reward comes from God. So this whole teaching is less about what you do, but the manner and the reason you do it. You know, this same teaching is mentioned again in the book of Luke. Luke 6, verse 36 to 38. Jesus says this, be merciful just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it shall be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And it's a little different here. Jesus doesn't say it exactly the same way. And there's two possible reasons for this. First of all, we're working from different notes from different people. There's people here today I can see taking notes. By the way, it's good to take notes. But I would say, if I was to look at your notes, in your notes, they wouldn't be exactly the same. You'd pick up on different things. You'd write it down in different ways. But of course, we also know that Jesus taught this teaching more than once. This was Jesus' manifesto. He taught it and he taught it. In fact, the context in Luke suggests to me when Jesus taught it here, this isn't the Sermon on the Mount. If we go to Luke 6, verse 17... it says, and he came down with them and stood on a level place with a great crowd of his disciples and a great multitude of people from all Judea and Jerusalem and the sea coast of Tyre and Sidon. So Jesus was up a mountain. That's actually where he chose the 12 when he was up that mountain. He prayed all night. He chose the 12. Then he came down to a level place and teaches. Whereas the Sermon on the Mount, he went up. So this is most likely a different occasion to what we read about in Matthew. But Jesus taught this more than once. And when you teach the same message more than once, you say it a little different each time. Especially if you're like Jesus, you didn't have written notes in front of you. Most of the teaching in Luke is very much the same, but it's shorter than it is in Matthew. But Jesus hits a lot of the same points. And in that section too, it's also in a part of that message that's about the heart. It's about motivation. What's interesting is that in Matthew's version, Jesus follows this statement up by making a judgment. He compares people to dogs and pigs, which, in case you hadn't guessed, That's not a compliment. Jesus compared the Pharisees to whitened tombs. Not a compliment. He's saying, you look good on the outside, but you're dead on the inside. It's a pretty harsh judgment. Also, when Jesus says, do not judge and you will not be judged, what does that mean? Because that's not actually the case. We know all men will be judged. So there's more going on in this section than just never judge anyone and you yourself will not be judged. Matthew's version actually says, the same measure that you judge by, you will be judged with. See, it all comes down to the state of our hearts. Are we judging out of concern or pride? Are we making ourselves better than other people? Are we looking down on other people? Are we condemning a person or are we warning them about sin? See, when we pronounce a judgment on a person, it puts us in a very dangerous place. Because if we think we can judge someone, we probably think too much of ourselves. I want to look at three reasons why we cannot judge each other. Number one, we can never know all the facts. Even when we think we do, we don't. In fact, especially when we think we know all the facts, we probably don't. The famous Rabbi Hillel once said this, do not judge a man until you yourself have come into his circumstances or situation. Even when you know the facts, no man knows the strength of another man's temptation. See, I could judge someone who has an alcohol problem. But in truth, I've never struggled with that. So I don't know the pull it has on that person. I don't know it. I don't know the circumstances that drove that person to mask their hurt with that alcohol. I don't know. That doesn't mean I ignore it. It doesn't mean I condone it. But it means the more I understand, the more I can relate and help instead of judge. See, you probably know this about me. I'm quite placid as a person. I don't do angry very well. I have never had to struggle against anger. That means I don't know what it's like to be a person that has that rage inside them that burns up at the smallest thing. I don't know how that feels. So I can't judge someone who flies off the handle at the smallest thing because I don't know what that feels like. So I can't judge. I can call out sin, which anger is. I can counsel. I can pray. I can do what I can to help. But I must not judge because I've never walked in that person's shoes. I had a good childhood. I can say that because my parents aren't here today. I can't understand what a bad childhood does to someone. So I can't judge how that plays out in their life. I have never had to develop coping mechanisms due to abuse. So I don't know how that feels. So I can't judge someone who has. In fact, the more you understand about the temptations that a person has to deal with, the more you understand the journey that they've been on, the more you understand the path that led them to sin. It's still sin. It still needs to be challenged. But judge the sin, not the person. Help the person. You will never know all the facts in somebody's life. You will never be able to completely understand. So who are you to judge them? Whereas God does know all the facts. God does know the pull. God does understand. Therefore, God can judge. The second reason why we should never judge anyone is it is almost impossible for any person to make an impartial judgment. It's impossible. We're always swayed by something, be it our instinct, our gut, our reason, sometimes even our compassion will affect our judgment. In fact, most of the time we don't judge correctly at all. We assume, we reason, and we react. Apparently, when the Greeks would hold a very important trial, they would hold it in the dark, so that the judge and the jury would not be able to see the man on trial. So they'd only be influenced by the facts of the case. I don't know if that's true or not, but I get the point. But you know what, even then, if you couldn't see him, but you could hear him, you'd still make assumptions about him. Has anybody watched the talent show, The Voice? Shame on you. No, not really. Not really. The judges turn their backs so they can't see the singers. All they can do is hear the voice. So they're making the judgment not on what they look like, just on the voice. But I've got to say, I'm going to turn around, sorry. I'm going to say, as they're listening, I wonder whether they ask questions like this. Do they sound old? I wonder if that voice sounds like it comes from an ugly person. You see, you can't help, even if all you get is a voice, is to find an angle. You know, there's an old story about a Persian judge who'd been given a bribe-based verdict. Somebody had bribed him, and it affected his verdict. And when the king, called Cambyses, discovered what had happened, he ordered that judge to be executed. Then he had the skin flayed from the body of that dead person. And with that skin, he covered the chair that the judges sat on, so that they would be sitting on a reminder to say, never be prejudiced when you judge. And here's the thing. Even if that story's true, I don't know if it is, I can guarantee it wouldn't have worked. Even sat upon the skin of somebody who was executed for being biased, you'd still be biased. No person is completely impartial. Only a completely impartial person has any right to judge another. And it is not human nature to do that. Only God can be completely impartial. And only God can judge. And the third reason, well, I need to move to the next section of Scripture to get to that one. So let me just read Matthew 7, verses 3 to 5. Do you notice the speck that's in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite! First take the log out of your own eye, then you will be able to see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Now, some people have over-spiritualized this. Jesus is making a joke. He's been sarcastic. Essentially, Jesus is saying some people act like this. Hold on. He's saying some people, they're like this. Steve. You got something in your eye. Do you want me to get that out for you? Do you want me to get that out of your eye for you? That's essentially what Jesus is saying. He's saying some people, they're walking around. I didn't poke you in the eye there, did I? Okay, good. Focusing on somebody else's problem instead of dealing with your own. How often are we like that? I'd rather deal with their problem than mine. Does that mean you don't want to help somebody who's got a speck in their eye? You okay? It doesn't mean you don't want to help somebody through a situation. It doesn't mean you don't point out sin. Not verse 5. It says, first, take the log out of your own eye. Then, you will be able to clearly help and see. doesn't say don't help. It says deal with what's going on in your life, then help. Sort yourself out first, otherwise what good are you? But then, help. See, some Christians just want to get the log out of their eye, and then they don't help somebody else with a speck. Some Christians want to ignore the log and can't reach to get the speck out of somebody else's eye. Sort yourself out, but then help. It's like when you fly, you get those air safety videos. Or they do the demonstration from the front. They always tell you, put your mask on first. Then help somebody else who can't get their mask on. Because if you don't put your mask on first, you're going to be no good. You're not going to be able to help someone. See, here's the problem. So often, we hide our own problems by helping other people. As long as I'm busy, as long as I'm active, as long as I'm helping lots and lots of people with their specs, then maybe, just maybe, nobody's going to notice the log in my eye. Just maybe I'll get away with it, because I'm really helpful. I don't need to deal with this. I'm being helpful. Let me tell you, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. What it'll do, it'll cause more problems, because as much as you're trying to help people, you can't see properly. Now, Jesus isn't just being sarcastic. He's making a very real point, which leads us to that third reason why we can't judge somebody. No man is good enough to judge another person, because only the faultless has the right to look for faults in others. Because only the faultless can see what needs to be done. No man can criticize somebody in something they are not themselves willing to do. Every weekend at football stadiums, they're full of people who are very vocal critics, but if they had to get down on the pitch themselves, would be absolutely useless. Yeah? A few weeks ago, I heard Middlesbrough's last game of the season. I was talking to Kevin Pimblott. He went with Cliff. And he said, the whole game, the fans of Middlesbrough booed their own team constantly throughout the game. They even called for their own keeper to be sent off. And we can go, that's bad. That's bad. I wouldn't do that. But I tell you what, it happens in churches all the time. I think the church might be the only army in the world that enjoys shooting its own troops. No man has the right to criticize another unless he is prepared to venture into that same situation himself. No man is good enough to criticize his fellow man. Only the flawless one, only Jesus Christ, is good enough to truly judge. But what we can't do is think Jesus is teaching this. You know what? Everyone's got stuff going on. Deal with yours and tolerate everybody else's hypocrisy. Because he's not saying that. He's saying deal with your log, then help with a speck. See, love is much more demanding than saying we've all got stuff going on, let's just deal with it ourselves. If we love somebody, we can't let it go. If we love somebody and we see them damaging themselves or their family, we can't sit by and let it happen. When we love someone and we see that they're causing these negative effects in their life through their sin, we can't just sit back by and go, well, you know what, I'm not perfect. Who am I to judge? If we love them, we'll do something about it. Jesus said, remove your plank. Remove your log. Deal with a thing that would lock you into condemnation and hypocrisy. Then, as a repentant sinner who is saved by grace, help people. Galatians 6, verse 1, it says, brothers, if anyone is caught in transgression, those of you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. We often miss that bit out when we're trying to help someone. but in a spirit of gentleness. And keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Doesn't mean you don't deal with it. You deal with it in the right spirit. Jesus then goes on to say this. Do not give dogs what is holy. And do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample you underfoot and turn to attack you. Now, this is a statement. Can you leave the statement up for me just for a bit? That on the surface seems extremely judgmental. Calling somebody a dog or calling somebody a pig sounds extremely judgmental. It's a statement that has been taken the wrong way many times and has been used as an excuse for exclusiveness to Christianity, to suggest some people are not worthy of the gospel. Well, if the gospel is the gospel, that is not correct. That is absolutely not correct. This statement does not mean some people are unworthy of the gospel. Some early Jewish Christians used this statement to argue that God's gift and God's grace through Jesus were for the Jews alone. To those who argued with Paul, this was one of the verses that they used. And they insisted that the Gentiles should get circumcised and become Jewish when they were saved, saying that they had to become Jewish to become a Christian. And that flies in the face of the message of Jesus. And it is a clear misunderstanding of what this verse means. So what is it Jesus is saying? Well, the difficult part is, do not give to dogs what is holy. You know, that's even been used to deny communion to people who've not been judged pure. Again, that's not the gospel. Before I get too far into this, I just want to mention a possibility. It's possible that this has been translated wrong. Just bear with me for a moment on this. Hebrew language would have something that you would call parallelism. Proverbs is full of parallelisms. Here's an example in Proverbs. Proverbs 18:7. A fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are a snare to his soul. See, the second line there is a restatement of the first line. Mouth and lips, ruin and snare to his soul. You say it once, and then you amplify it and emphasize that statement. We see Jesus using the same technique in the Lord's Prayer in Matthew 6, verse 10. Your kingdom come. Can we put that up? Matthew 6, 10. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It should be on the list. You got it there? Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. For the kingdom to come, his will shall be done. The kingdom is his will getting done. It's a parallel. And this section here looks a lot like another example of this, except it doesn't quite work. If you put up the one that's called quote 3 for me, quote 3. Do not give what to dogs is what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs. With the exception of one word, this parallel works. But one word throws it off. Give and throw, they work together. Dogs and pigs works. But holy and pearls doesn't. Now it just so happens that the Hebrew word for holy, when written down, looks very similar to another word. In fact, when written in Hebrew, which has no written vowels, it looks the same. The word for holy is kadosh. The word for earring is kadasha. In the Talmud, an earring in a pig's nose was a proverbial phrase that means something that is out of place. So it's possible, and I'm just saying it's possible, that the actual phrase is this: do not give an earring to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before pigs. That way, the parallel between the two works. Now, either way, Jesus is not calling people dogs and pigs. He's speaking like a proverb. So that means we're not talking about some people who are not good enough for the gospel, who are not good enough for something holy. But there's some people to whom the gospel is actually just out of place. What I mean by that is, they just don't accept it. They just don't accept it. Even in the original translation, if earring was holy, there's people who sometimes just don't accept what you're sharing. It's not about exclusivity. Jesus is saying some people just don't get it. I'm sure every person here who shared the gospel with someone, in fact, every person who has shared the gospel throughout history knows this is true. Some people just don't accept the truth. There's actually a saying, try and try as you might. Try and try as you might. The truth just doesn't seem to get through. Not at this point in their life. That's not to say it never will, but something needs to change in their life for them to become open. There's a saying that the rabbis had at the time, and it says this, even as a treasure must not be shown to everyone, so with the words of the law, one must not go deeply into them except in the presence of suitable people. See, what this means is some people's minds are so shut off that the second you mention God, they turn on you. Yeah? The very second you mention Jesus, they're ready to trample over you. Some people are open enough to argue with you. That's okay. To debate with you. At least that's an opening. But some people, you can see the wall just go shh. Yeah? Straight away. See, a man can only understand what he is fit in that moment of his life to understand. They can be so blinded by sin and corruption that they're just not listening. Maybe some of us were like that once. The second somebody mentioned Jesus, shh. But something changed in our life that brought us to him. There's some people, like Richard Dawkins and Stephen Fry, who haven't just intellectually concluded that there's no God. That's not what they've done. They quite freely admit they don't want there to be a God. They don't want him to exist. Therefore, they've intellectualized reasons why he doesn't exist. Therefore, they are not open to a discussion. Because they're not really seeking the truth. They're seeking proof to back up what they already believe. There are those to whom the gospel is foolish, and those to whom it's something they don't understand, but they do want to know more. These can sometimes be the same person at different points in their life. Wisdom is knowing which is which. Jesus is not saying we class some people like dogs. He's not saying some people are like pigs, as if they're less than us. That's to ignore what he just said about judging. What he's saying is we should use wisdom in when and who we share with. You know, when the mob got angry at Ephesus, Paul didn't preach at them. He did in the Thessalonica, where he was described as being in front of a wicked mob. On a one-to-one, perhaps he would have spoken to any one of those people. But in those moments, he didn't do it because he knew the message would not be received. I am sure we've all experienced this, where we've shared our testimony of what God has done in our lives. Or we've told people, oh, you've got to meet Jesus. He's just turned my life around. And we've been met with hostility or sarcasm. They've pulled it apart. They've trampled on your pearls. See, our great pearls, because that's what the gospel is to us. It's such a precious thing. To see it get trampled on, to see it get pulled down, to see somebody pull down the gospel, it can be upsetting, yeah? It can be hurtful. But what Jesus is saying is, it shouldn't be a surprise. What do you expect when you give pearls to a pig? That the pig is somehow going to appreciate? That the pig's going to wrap it around its neck and go, ooh, I look good? Of course not. It's not the pig's fault. That's just the natural reaction of a pig. It's not got the capacity in it to appreciate pearls. Pearls are just not on a pig's agenda. Remember, this passage is directly following one on judgment. We are not to judge people when they react to the gospel like that. We shouldn't get all hit up and angry about them and say, oh, that person, I tell you what, God is going to be so mad at them for what they've just said about the gospel. No, we should expect it. Because they don't see the value in pearls. When Jesus is talking, when you use that term pearls, it's an interesting choice. Because what is a pearl? It's something precious. Jesus told a parable about a pearl of great value. That it was so valuable to you, you'd sell everything you owned just to get it. See, pearls are expensive and precious things. And to us, our testimony is a precious, valuable thing, yes? Our experience of God is valuable, it's precious. The gospel and the saving work of Jesus on the cross is the most valuable thing I have. And when someone pulls it apart or mocks it, it hurts. It hurts to see the work of the cross mocked on TV every day. It hurts. When the response is hostility, it hurts. But why would a pig see the value in pearls? Remember, this isn't a judgment on people. This is about wisdom. That person might not get it today. They might not see the value in it right now. But they will. When the time is right, they will. They are on a journey, just as we were on a journey. There was times people shared with us that we didn't want to hear. But the time came where we did. They might react like a dog or a pig now. But life is full of changes. You know, there's nothing in your life that anybody has that can't be changed with one phone call. One phone call can change any life. So be patient with them. Sometimes you know the time right now is not right to share with them. You see, you don't harvest a seed the second the shoot pops up. Some people, and I'm sure you can relate to this, you've brought to church lots, and they've heard some great messages. They've been in times where you've took them away somewhere, and they've been in powerful moves of the Spirit. They've heard the very best version of your testimony. You've even prayed with them. They might even have been healed. And they still refuse to come to Jesus. They keep on sinning. They keep on refusing God. There comes a time where you just got to shake the dust off your feet. A time where actually you need to move on. Sometimes we can spend years trying to reach one particular person. And every time you do it, it is like wading through treacle. Despite how good you are to them, despite how many good things you do for them, they still just don't respond. Meanwhile, we've passed by loads of people and been distracted by this one, and we've missed all these people who could have responded. Matthew 10:14, Jesus says, "And if anyone will not receive your or listen to your words, shake the dust from your feet when you leave that house or town." Acts 13:50-51, "But the Jews incited the devout women of high standing and the leading men of the city, stirred up persecution against Paul and Barnabas, and drove them out of their district. But they shook the dust from their feet against them and went to Iconium." Does that mean God's done with those people? No. Not at all. But it means we need to realize that there's times when we are going nowhere with them. We're getting nowhere. Move on and wait for a time when the message will be received. Maybe this morning this resonates with you and somebody you know. Is there someone you've shared and shared and shared with? You've invited them to outreach after outreach. You've prayed for them. You've even seen them be healed of things. You've given them so many inspirational messages. You've helped them every time they've been in need. And all they've done is trample on your pearls. All they've done is turn on you whenever anything goes wrong in their life and blames you and God for every little thing. God still loves them. God is not willing for them to perish. But maybe for now, you need to move on to someone who's going to be more receptive. You don't forget about them. You put a pin in them. And you come back when they're ready to listen. We are responsible for the good news. We are not responsible for people's response to the good news. Our job is not to force conversions or to ram the gospel down people's throats until they're sick. Because if you ram it down their throat too hard, it's just going to come back up. Our job is to share. How people respond, that's up to them. We must never judge people. Only God has the ability to have the correct and real picture of anyone. James 4:11-12 says, "Do not speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and the judges of the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is only one lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you? Who are you to judge your neighbor?" We can look, and we must confront sin. But we must look at the offense and not the offender. Because you don't know how that hold sin has on a person. But I tell you, if you leave them to it, you're helping nobody. We must remember our own sin and the temptation that everybody goes through is not uncommon. Help others, but don't do it with a stick hanging out your eye. Trying to help someone when you can't see properly, I tell you, will do more harm than good. Look at yourself, deal with your sin, and then you might have some great advice for somebody when it comes to help defeat theirs. Don't hide behind your helping as if somehow people won't notice the log hanging out of your eye because you're so very useful. You do yourself a disservice when you do that. We must examine our motives, we must examine where our heart lies. In what spirit do you look at other people? In what spirit do you look at other people's sin? Do you look at them out of love and concern? Or out of a sense of moral superiority? Do we do it with humility? Or do we do it with arrogance? Do we do it out of a sincere helpfulness? Or out of a sense of anger? Do we check our own weakness before we get the placards out? The wrong kind of judgment is condemning. The right kind is helpful and life-giving. Sometimes judgment is needed, but it's got to be done right. And remember, you will be judged with the measure you use. You go around with double standards, that'll come back at you. When someone says to you, "Judge not, lest you be judged," ask them to clarify what they mean by judge. Because the way people use it, they're trying to stop you speaking out against sin. They're trying to stop you warning people about danger. And that's absolutely not what Jesus meant. We have to get over this, "Who am I to say that that's wrong?" mentality. Who are you? You're a child of the King of Kings. You're an ambassador for the kingdom of heaven. Let me tell you, you have a right to be able to help people. You are here to make a difference. And we cannot let sin rule people's other lives, but we must tackle it in the right way. We can't be always coming down on people. "You always do this. Look at you. Always doing this." That's not helpful. It's judging. Instead of pointing out people's problems, let's help them get through them. Amen.